way too much to mention. Many more are still around. And then there are those of us who continue to make a contribution in song. We are the children of the revolution. We are the children of the 70s. We are the children of the revolution. We are the fighters, if you please. It's we who fought for your salvation. So you don't have to fight.
Yes, we're back. Yes, we're back. This is the governance program on Q. And this is Ati Martin, your host. And this is, if you will, the second round of governance. As you know, we had a long break. And that gave you and us time to sort of, you know, do some reflection and trying to figure out, you know, what was the effect, what was the usefulness of the programs that we were doing. And you gave us good feedback. And so we are now entering, if you will, the second phase of the program, the second round, and this, if you will, is the first edition of that second round. And we have a very interesting program lined up for you today. It's in keeping with the season and the time. And we have an interesting lineup of persons who will join the conversation in and out of studio. And of course, you, the listeners, will be invited to join the conversation as well. As you can well imagine, there's no shortage of issues in Dominica nowadays. And I just want to give you a hint as to where we're going to be going with some of the conversation that we'll be doing this week. It will come as no surprise to you, but you'll be surprised and I think, you know, really excited by the angle that we will take on the discussion. That's the dice. And of course, the lyrics, of course, are the creation of his writer, Pat Aaron. And Pat will join us, all things being equal, Pat will join us a little bit later. But we have a really important opportunity to learn some things that are vital to the fortunes and future of Dominica's culture and Dominica's society. You know, this is not just about a song. This is not just about Calypso. This is not even just about Carnival. It's about culture, which is deeper, wider, broader, and more critical than all of these things taken one by themselves. And what we want to do this evening is kind of take, if you will, a different view, a different vantage point, looking at Calypso as a reflection of the culture of the society, meaning the identity, how the society tries to identify itself through its music, its art, its paint, its architecture, its agriculture, its education, its sports, whatever. Everything a culture does in some way speaks to the identification, its branding of itself. And so we are going to kind of try to dissect, try to look a little deeper than the lyrics, a little deeper than the melody. Certainly we're going to look well beyond, quote unquote, the competition, because it's not just about a competition, it's about a culture. And yes, a culture is in competition, maybe you can put it that way, with other cultures. But most important, it's in competition with itself and its desire and its intent to survive. And who manages that? Who manages and controls that, if you will, those cultural expressions? And are there rules? Are there regulations? Not rules of a competition, but are there guidelines for what culture is? Are there guidelines for how it should be protected and looked after? And who should look after it? And are there areas of culture, of our behavior as a society, for which the global community has a role that it plays? Some of you may or may not know that we are signatories to something called the Convention for the Protection of World Cultural and Natural Heritage. That's a really important piece of paper, and it's not just paper. It's a really important piece of our history as a young nation, that we were able to sort of say, you know, it's really important for us to say to the world who we are, and it's really important for us to find multiple ways for doing so, for doing that. And it's really important that we don't allow what we do to define who we are to the world to become just another, if you will, economic product, another commercial product. In other words, do we sing calypso for tourism? Do we sing calypso for competition? Or do we sing calypso for other reasons as well? And if so, what are those reasons? And what are the rules and regulations and guidelines that in fact govern those kinds of things? So we're going to take a different kind of look at this thing. And we wanted to look at it also from the point of view of the artist and the writer, the lyricist. You know, when somebody sings a song, what is that in terms of an expression of ownership? When somebody writes a song, how does writing a song, writing the lyrics of a song, writing the music of a melody, express some form of ownership? And what are the rights of that ownership? What are the responsibilities of that? And who, what institutions in our society actually are the best ones to be in a position to decide where these artistic expressions take place, where a song is sung, where a dance is put on, where an orchestra performs, what kinds of instruments are promoted as national or culturally consistent instruments, etc. These are issues that are not often spoken about, especially now at Carnival time, because everybody wants a CEO. You're looking for a road match and you're looking for a monarch. End of story. And after Carnival, the art form tends to be put away. But we're going this evening to have persons who will be able to bring perspective to this. And we have in studio with us, we have attorney Henry Shillingford, who is with us. And Henry is somebody I've known for quite a while. In fact, I've known him most of his life.
if not all,
and I do know that this is something about which he feels very intensely and very strongly, and has a tremendous amount of knowledge and experience in the business of art and music and the management of it as a product, as well as its creation as an expression of the art form. So Henry, I'm so glad you could actually take the time and be with us this evening. Thank you for coming.
Well, it's always an honor to be on your airwaves, Afi.
Well, I mean, I'm going to be more humble than you tonight. It's my pleasure. And of course, in studio with us this evening, somebody who at this time, well, he needs absolutely no introduction in terms of music and calypso. I speak of Ian Jackson, and a musician who writes songs, who writes lyrics, who produces music. Now he's producing his daughter. Mm-hmm. He produced himself and other Calypsonians and other times. He's part of the Phase 5 Orchestra, steel band, Assam, with bass and drums and stuff like that. And so we have Ian in studio, and you can expect to hear from Ian on some of the things that I've mentioned, but also some of his own perspectives. And we expect to join us by phone from New York. We have who will join us? Mr. Pat Aaron will join us. And he's going to join us. He's the writer, as you know, of that song. And many other songs. He's written many, many of the songs, not just for the Dice, but for many other Calypsonians. He wrote for himself in another life. And we've just been joined by one of two persons who I expect this evening, because they represent an important institutional aspect of the music world at this time of year, the Calypso Tents. And we have Dr. Valda Henry. Dr. Valda Henry, how are you doing?
I'm wonderful, and how are you doing?
And you're here, you can wear any cap you wish, but I'm going to make you wear the mass camp cap, okay. Mostly.
That's fine with me. I guess when you wear many hats, then you get to choose.
Absolutely.
Or sometimes it gets chosen for you which hat you wear.
Right, thank you so much for coming. Because we also believe that the institutional in engagement with Calypso and the art form is really, really important, you know, in terms of defining its role, how it gets expressed in the society. And we expect Norman later. From the Stardom Tent, he should be here to join us, so that will kind of give us a nice kind of rounded perspective on what is the view from the vantage point of the tents and how that actually contributes to the pluses and minuses. But, you know, it may be a good thing. Jaco, you are a Calypso writer and have been for. Why don't we kick off with you? And then I want to ask Henry, having heard what you have said, about what is the art form that you've been so engaged in, and why, and what role do you see it has played or has been allowed to play in our society as a part of the toolkit, the cultural toolkit of Dominica? Mm-hmm.
Okay, good night, listeners. So, of course, Q95. And it's nice to be on the other side. I normally have a program on Monday nights. After you had a program Monday, talking about Calypso, but from a different perspective.
I only just found out about it. I'm sorry.
No problem. It's a different perspective.
I assure you, I'll listen from
there. And, basically, for me, I've been writing since the 70s, since going to grammar school. Mm-hmm. So it's decades I have been doing this stuff. And at first, you know, it started as a fun thing. You know, you do Calypso, guys write about different things about Calypso. But in maturing, I realized that it's more than that. Mm-hmm. Calypso is basically the yardstick from which we judge society and we make decisions and we inform leaders and so on where the people want to go and how the people view things. Mm-hmm. And the whole idea of masquerade, you know how it was born, the masking of stuff is very important, I still see in Calypso in that perspective. Even in Trinidad, reading guys like Gordon Rowley and so, professor, who did works and so on Calypso writing, Steinberg Henry and so on, of Dominica, who did works on writing of Calypso. Basically, I see it as the platform, the voice for the voiceless. Mm-hmm. I mean, you find that politicians can speak anytime on the air, they can come anytime on DBS Radio anyway and come and speak and utter their views and sentiments and whatever. Mm-hmm. But the Calypsonian is the one who at the end of the day express what the people desire and not necessarily what the politicians want to do. And as such, you have different approaches. You may choose to approach the Calypso from the point of view that you speak of what you see, and you may want to speak for it in a very true voice, or you want to mask it so that people get a double meaning as to what you're trying to present to the people. But at the end of the day, basically, the Calypsonian's responsibility is very high, the writer in particular, because many times right now, as I've been reminded, that we have reversed the rules. Before, the Calypsonian was the writer. Today, right now, the writer specialization. There are very few Calypsonians presently today who actually write their songs. And you just mentioned Pat Aaron, which I'm sure we'd call, who have written for a number of persons. I myself have written for a number of persons, Tim Neuer and so on. And we have persons echoing the voices of the people. And that is why, for instance, the Dice is so popular. He sings what the people want to happen. And there has been a sort of enigma in the Dice, in that you may find, well, over the years, that the Labour Party is voted in consistently every time. But yet, people like the Dice so much because they still understand what he is saying, and he can deliver a message that the masses can appreciate. Even the last intervention we had where they did not want him to sing, and then you could see what happened at the park, you know, over the weekend when Dicey came to sing. So he actually echoes the sentiment of people, and it should not be hushed. So I think we have a very big responsibility. What politicians do here, or what politicians do see, or their vision, we are the people. We set that stage. We have a platform, finally, every year, that Calypso students and ordinary people can come out and express their views, not just about love for country, because we are there to actually talk about the system and things that are happening and look at it in various spheres and various ways, and our role is very important.
You already raised a really interesting kind of issue that I hope we can, you know, dissect a little bit this evening, which is when the singer sings the lyrics, the lyrics were not written by the singer. The lyrics were written by, let's say, in this case, you, you know, Pate. So really, if people really like what they're hearing, they like what you are interpreting to be the mood in the country.
Certainly.
And the singer is just kind of delivering mechanism for, is that?
Yes,
so you are the person as the writer who is the key person, but you're not in the limelight.
Yeah, imagine Mark Murray told me some time ago in his copyright business that since lyrics carries 35 points and melody carries 30 points, and the writer, the composer is the one who deals with that, you should be getting 70% because the other 30% is just the performer's own, which makes sense, you know, I mean, in terms of, you know, figures
that,
and so on.
That's one conclusion.
But then I also observe that if you don't have a Dice, if you don't have a Tasha P, if you don't have a Daddy Chess to internalize that song and bring it out, then your lyrics and melody can fall flat, basically. So, you know, they both go hand in hand. And so, you know,
To be truthful, then, the singer, him or herself, is also a product of the same society.
Yeah.
And so the intensity or the clarity with which they get the message across is also a reflection of that society. Henry, you have a big picture view of culture and the arts, and have a view of the rights, and who is the point person, the key point person in this Calypso culture thing?
The audience. The audience is always the key person in any art form. That's why critiques are so important. But just listening to Ian talk about Calypso, you can see that in the global milieu of culture, Calypso is quite particular. He hardly ever talked about music or dance or, you know, he talked about social commentary. And he said the purpose of Calypso wasn't to make people dance or play mass, which is really wild to me, but was to comment on issues that are politically relevant. I think that's where Calypso has been failing most recently, and I talked to you about that, and you told me, well, in Trinidad it was very political in the early 60s during Eric Williams' time. It's not so much now. My view is that there's too much commentary in Calypso today. There's not enough double entendre. There's not enough jokey Calypso. There's not enough fun. It's all too serious. It seems when I play mass, I loosen up and get wild. Carnival, and that's another thing as a big issue to me, is the Calypsonians and the Calypso Association in particular, dismemberment from Carnival. It's somehow that the Calypso can somehow exist without Carnival. I think that is a really, really myopic view. For example, Calypso Association, that was a big beef with me when I was putting bands on the road. Calypso Association makes hundreds of thousands of dollars every year on Carnival.
Yeah.
But they don't put one money to the street, not 1 cent. If I was government, I would institute that 25% of gate receipts from Calypso shows must go to the road. Because the road is what it's about. It's the audience. It's the people. Culture is about people. It's not about writers or Calypsonians or musicians. They're, as he says, interpreting the people's mood. So it's always about me and you. And not about Ian, for the respect. But that also is what makes Calypso so interesting. That and the fact that it's competition. Bob Marley was not in no competition with Peter Tosh or with Toots and the Maytals, you know, when they were making their music. But here, And with Carnival and Calypso, it is competition-based. Mm-hmm. So that brings in a whole nother kind of thing to an art form. Mm-hmm. You know,
is it a good thing to have Calypso competition?
I don't think so. I don't think art is a competitive thing. Mm-hmm. But it's the culture, as you say, and culture.
Is, yeah.
And remember, culture, this is the creative culture, because political culture is culture too. Mm-hmm. It's a culture now to ban dice. That's a political culture. Mm-hmm. That's human rights issues and about, suppressing voices, you know? I'm losing my words. What is that called when you burn books? Huh? Censorship, right? This is a process of censorship. It's like net neutrality and the arguments over net neutrality, if we look at it globally. Mm-hmm. And these things are filtering down even to these small societies, so that's when it becomes dangerous.
We're going to come to that as a major segment of the discussion.
I know, but I just segued it because of what Ian was talking about and the differentiation. So they're recognizing that Ian is saying they're making comments on them, so they're fighting back. You know, this the system.
But you mentioned, as did Ian, different institutions that have a role that they play, like the Calypso Association and the organizers of Carnival, the Festivals Commission, and there's another institution that plays a crucial role because it has a carnival life, which is the tents. The tents invite the people to get close, up close and personal with the Calypsonians. And it's not just about, it's about the CO, it's about the dancing, that's where you see the dancing taking place, but it's about internalizing the meaning of the Calypso. What Valda, you've been with the Mass Camp now for several years. What is the message coming out of Mass Camp that kind of tells you that, you know, this traditional form of Calypsonian engaging audience in a tent format is a good one and needs to be continued? Or do you see some adjustments that actually need to be made?
In terms of the tent, I mean, the tent, as you said, provides the opportunity. Well, I should start good evening to the listening audience, I should say that. The tent provides the opportunity, yes, for the Calypsonians to get an audience to their songs, even prior to the big competitions. Mm-hmm. It provides an opportunity for the audience themselves to get to know them. But I think, and even when Mass Camp perform, if you go back to the constitution of Mass Camp, and while we may have meandered along the way, it is more than that. I think for us at Mass Camp, it is, one, it's in terms of education and sensitization, in terms of the role of Calypso, the role of the cultural art form, Calypso, and its role within the cultural industries. It is also one of the opportunities to provide that Calypso is not just a for carnival event, but Calypso, since it speaks to social commentaries, since it speaks to the voice of the people, should really be a year-round event.
And should be.
Yes, and mm-hmm. so how do we promote Calypso mm-hmm. as that year-round event? Mm-hmm. What exposure to do we give our own artists and the members of our tent? And one of the things that I personally strongly believe and hope, and, you know, the Mass Camp, though we have not been very successful at that, is that because Calypso is an art form, I believe the artists ought to be compensated properly so that he too can make a living wage mm-hmm. out of his art, out of his career. Because to choose to be a Calypsonian, I think it's if we have to look at it in the bigger picture, is a career choice. Mm-hmm. And while yes, you may have another career, yes, I mean, you may think it's just about the CEO, but it's a career choice because it calls for a lot of dedication, it calls for a lot of commitment to the form. It calls for discipline in terms of learning the lyrics, in terms of practicing, in terms of upping the game. And I mean, if we look at the semifinals that took place on Saturday, and if we over the past few years in Dominica, there has been a distinct improvement in terms of the professionalism on stage, mm-hmm. in terms of people don't just come and sing anything mm-hmm. in any hall, any what, but they represented the message that they bring and to carry out. Some go overboard, but it is that. And because it's
what's the reason for that?
The reason for that, I think, is because one, persons recognize that Calypso is an important plays an important role in society. Two, I think the fact that over the years, say in places like Trinidad in particular, we've had persons who participated in Calypso have added and given credence. When you have people like Dr. Chogdos, Horace Liverpool, mm-hmm. being a Calypsonian for all these years, you have Professor Rollier, who mm-hmm. continues to write and so on. And so all of a sudden, Calypso, while yes, it is the it is the voice of the voiceless, mm-hmm. recognizes that in order to be the voice of the voiceless, it too needs power. Mm-hmm. Because without power, truly, you can speak from now till the cows come home and it goes nowhere.
No change.
And so they recognize that they too must up their game. Mm-hmm. Because one, people are also expecting more of them.
Yeah, here's an interesting.
That is what, because as you said, it's the people. The people are expecting more of the Calypsonians. Yeah. I remember one year, and I won't call the artist, you know, I think it was at the quarters, or the quarters, yes. And, you know, everybody was preparing. And I saw this particular artist, and I saw him, and I was like, okay, but he's about to go out in the next songs to come. But I didn't see him making any, like, preparation to go and change and so on, as I saw the other artists. And then lo and behold, when it was his time to perform, he went on stage as he was. And the crowd, you would not believe it. The reception from the crowd was like solo, mute. That even in the delivery of the performance, a very good song did not have, one, the impact. Because remember, the Calypsonian also feed off the crowd. And, you know, afterwards I met him and I said, so he was saying something because he was totally distraught that he didn't get to the next stage.
Okay.
Because he had such a great song. I said, that may be so. But you know what? On the night of that message, your appearance did not match the song. And consequently, looking at the overall picture, the judges did not see you going.
But that leads to a discussion, if you will, of the question of, if Calypsonians and Calypso are so important, and in fact, not just a reflection of the society's situation, but also what is being suggested is that it's a change factor. It can influence the society. That's what. So let me ask: is Calypso able to? Can you point to Calypso that has influenced action and movement to change in society? And if so, how and where and to what extent?
I want to take that on. You know, I'm of the view that that happened in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Mm-hmm. Calypso today does not, in my mind, influence society.
Why?
I will tell you one of the reasons, because we have become so politicized that it doesn't matter what people say, really. And that is why it's an enigma. In the 80s, if Dice was an 8-time monarch in the 80s, this present government would have changed. Mm-hmm. When Scrunter sang about Calypso in the parliament, when NC sang about how to rock the boat, Miss Charles came up from power. Every Calypsonian I can go down over the years who sang a multitude of songs that was anti-government at the time, you can be sure in the next election, that government fell because people actually felt the pulse of the Calypsonian. But today,
What changed?
Well, what changed? Because we have become our own person. We have been called self-centered.
Or is it the art form that
the art form has not? No, the art form has not changed. People themselves are basically just seeing Calypsonians singing that, yes, it's true, boy. They go back and they continue the same ways. People, Calypso is no longer defining people's life. So it has become a staged event as a way of life.
It lost its power. Henry?
A lot, yes.
Well, first of all, I want to disagree with Valda in the sense that, and it's a respect for Calypso. I think Calypso is not so professional. That's why you can have 60 guys going up, you know, from the quarters for eliminations and then the quarters. And so it is the people's art. I mean, anybody can do it. I can go in competition next year.
Next year, yes.
Right. Not this year.
Next year,
I'll try. But, you know, so, and that's not taking anything. It shows how the art form is, as Ian was saying. It's not professional. It's not like, I am doing this because I feel this. One guy, I mean, Calypso, I don't know Calypso history that well. But just from seeing it in Dominica, a guy can just come today with a great song and sing and make it and don't do nothing next year. It can be one-hit wonders, just like you have in the music industry. But I don't know how art in itself, because what you're asking really is, does art affect political decisions.
That's my point.
I mean, that's, and it's because calypso is such an important art form in this particular area. I just think that's a difficult thing to ever put your finger on.
No, but Ian is suggesting that it has in the past.
It had in the past, yes.
Certainly. Signaled.
And have good examples of that
signaled
in the past.
Significant political change.
Just some examples of that.
Yeah. Well, you did too, Athi, in terms of the Eric Williams day and how Sparrow was a direct PNM man. And without that, I mean, Eric Williams may not have stayed in power.
Absolutely.
When Chuck does sang the driver kind of drive, he certainly could not drive, and they got rid of the driver.
Absolutely.
And captain, the ship is sinking. The ship did sink.
But for 8 years,
Dice is saying the driver cannot drive, and the driver is driving more.
The driver is still driving.
So that is the difference.
I'm driving faster.
That's the difference.
I don't know if I want to put the direct correlation and say it's because of the songs that went out. I don't know if I would want to go that far.
It's a hard thing to put your finger on and to say.
You understand? I think, you know, we'd have to do a little bit more scientific studies to come to that. But I get the point that Ian is making. But again, Yathvi, it also goes back, and maybe to a point that Henry says, maybe now, because Henry said for him, we're talking about all this commentary, he wants calypso for his CBO, for his dance, for his entertainment. And maybe there are too many serious calypsos. So maybe it, in the past, you had a better balance. So, you know, everything to the extreme in the end maybe loses its power, its effect, and maybe that is what. Because in the past, because even last night, Raymond Blackmore, Mr. Blackmore, on his DBS program, Calypso, he played some of the old Katero songs and so on. Even now, I listen to the song, I say, Lord, in this era now of saying no and all of this, some of these songs would be able to go nowhere. But let us go back to the era it was. So you had a mix of, yes, the social commentaries, but you also had some, this the good mix in terms of the songs that were witty, the songs that were humorous, and the songs that were downright smarty. And it provided a balance. And so that way, the songs that maybe were truly political with social commentary got, they had its greater
prominence.
Impact.
They had prominence.
Whereas if now if 40 of us go up and 40 of us sing the same social commentary in different forms, after a while, maybe it's fatigue.
Yeah. I think that is a very good point, Valda. And you'll find also that because there's 40 people, you just can't have 40 good things. And, you know, you just can't. You know, you can have one or two good things. Yes. You just can't have 40. So I think that's a very valid point. And by the way, I'm not interested in calypso just for CWO. I'm talking about, I'm really talking about like Mr. Walker. Yeah. I come to see your daughter.
You want things like
you know
that.
What I mean? I know she ugly, but she father full of money. You know, I mean, them is really lyrics. And so I think that, and they were shorter too. These calypsos are quite long. You're talking about people remembering lyrics. I mean, it's like.
Because there are four verses, three have four.
Well, and you have to have that?
Yeah.
Well, you
well who
three.
Makes these
you
rules?
Must have three, right? Yeah, it has to be
well,
a
normally
three.
It's three, three, four.
Three,
that is what is expected.
Like
but who decided that, Ian?
Okay, I will point to who decided that.
Because, you know,
that.
Let me tell you something. James Brown had a big, big hit with one word.
Yes, yes.
Please. Yeah. I mean, that was a hit. That was one lyric.
Yes.
One word. It's how he delivered it.
How delivered it, yes.
So, I mean, who decides that a good song has three verses?
Well, as soon as they start structuring calypso in lyrics, melody, etc., and assigning points to, that happened. Now, there's secondly, what we are missing out is that technology has allowed us to hear a song over and over and over again. In the times of Bayo Bois and Mr. Walker, when you sang it once, you had to get it once. You had to get it right away. If you didn't get it, that's it.
Yeah.
But right now, with the lyrics now, fans can do it over and over again. They can play it over again, which we did not have before. So that is why the songs were very short before. And, you know, people could catch it one time because you go down the road with it one time from Sunday, move into the road with it.
Yeah.
But right now you have it this been played over and over and over, and for you to get it, and then finally, after 2 months, you get it, and then we go on the road.
Yeah, but music is poetry, it's not prose. It's just, I mean, music is still poetry, it's not prose.
Well, let me ask you, all three of you, for your comment. It's all well and good, and we all can all agree on it, that the Calypsonians actually duly reflect what's going on in the society.
Yeah.
How accurately have they been able to do that in previous decades compared with now? Is it that the Calypsonians and the writers are missing some of the critical changes that have occurred and are occurring in the society writ large, because the society now is global with all the, you know, social media issues and so forth? So is it Is it more that we are missing the mark as writers and singers and performers? In other words, we're talking about a society that actually does not exist. Is that true? Is that possible? so that we are on point, if in a theoretical sense, but maybe we're off the mark.
Yeah, probably you have a point, Arthur. I was discussing with somebody the other day, and just to get back at the point I was making with Dice or probably anti-system calypsos and so on, I think presently, because we have become so much into ourselves, that unless things affect us personally, we don't see it as an issue. Before it was an issue if somebody spoke about one thing, it's the same thing with unions and everything else. Yeah. When Papa D had his problem, the entire country closed down and so on, other countries. Today, hundreds of Dominicans can have a problem. It doesn't really worry anybody. It doesn't happen to me.
Because look at an anomaly that is staring us in the face, and I don't think has been caught. Although I think Dice's song, The Looter, begins to try to catch it. If you listened to the reports from the private sector after Maria, they'll tell you that the most destructive hurricane last year was Hurricane Dominica, not Hurricane Maria.
Mackenzie said that a couple of times, yes. Mm-hmm.
All right? That the real losses that took them over the edge were the looting losses. They said so, and you can see businesses have made some adjustments. Some businesses have not been able to come back from that period, not restarted their operation. A lot of people are walking away. Mm-hmm. Some are considering walking away. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, the society is not engaging that in a frontal way. I don't hear the professionals. I don't hear the quote of the leaders of the society. Mm-hmm. And I don't even hear the masses, because the masses are what Dice lyrics in The Looter attempt to capture. The looter tries to say, maybe this is why.
We did that.
We did it. Mm-hmm. Maybe this is the perspective that is not being talked about, so let's sing about it. Mm-hmm. In other words, is there a disconnect? The art form, nice and so on, looking good. We say we can compete with Trinidad and Antigua and so on and so on. But the original purpose, the seminal purpose, which is to sort of nurture, care for, to mirror the society and say, this is who we are, this is what is happening, and this is what we get. Have we lost that? And does that song Looter irk because it's forcing us back to that? I don't know. I'm asking.
Well, I don't know the answer, but I will say to you, you know, as you said, is it that, you know, and Ian said, maybe there's a little disengagement of persons. In fact, just this evening, earlier this afternoon, we had this conversation in terms of, you know, the trade unions and the relevance, and person was saying to me they formed. And I said, it's not that. It's just that the trade unions, the times have changed, and the trade unions maybe need to engage differently than they engage in the 30s and the 40s. Because in 30s and the 40s, trade unions fought over bread and butter. But now everybody has bread and butter. They have ham, they have turkey, they have other things. So the trade unions need to begin to engage on a different level and say, what is it that our workers need?
I'm not sure, Valda, everybody has bread and butter.
Maybe not everybody, but you know the point I am making.
I know the point you're making, the larger picture here.
But is it that the trade unions have to recognize, because to a large extent, a lot of the most employers have provided the basics. In fact, the law has put a minimum, and most employers will meet the minimum and more. And the quest has to become, what is it that we need to engage more to get for our people in terms of benefit, in terms of health insurance, in terms of pensions? And to me, that is where the unions need to begin to truly engage.
In terms of climate change, in terms of the impact of climate change on jobs and
jobs and health, social security, and ensuring that it's paid and things like that. And take a broader picture. Mm-hmm. But now you went to a point, is it that people are not interested? And Ian made a point that now people have become more self-concentrated, which is a fact, I think. Mm-hmm. But I think also to know there are greater options. So whereas before in the 60s, 50s, 70s, how many people had the opportunity to leave? Not as many. So we had to stay and fight to get what it is we needed to give us a better way. Now, almost everybody has an opportunity. Our before children, as I said to people, like I take me as an example. When I left sixth form, fifth form, I had to go to sixth form. There was no ifs, buts, or ands about it. And after sixth form, I had to work before I could think of going to study.
Going anyway.
Right now, children don't even get to finish high school. Parents are already engaging to send them out. They finish O-level CXs, they out. Finish those who go to state college, they out. So there are options. So because they're also out, and sometimes when they go out, they say, please don't try to come back to Dominica. Try to find your life over there. I think the engagement is missing.
And there's the oxymoron is that when they come back, they're still perpetuating the same thing they were perpetuating. You thought they'd be smarter and brighter, and they come back sometimes and they perpetuate the same thing their parents were doing.
But why? Because they were socialized by their parents. So I mean, it's not a
so then they're going to university and so forth. That almost doesn't mean anything.
No, because they come back, most of them, with a thing of entitlement. That they come back because I have a first degree, I have a master's, I expect to get the biggest job, the biggest salaries, and so on. And truly, it is really not that. And so they come and they find a disengagement. They come with a thing of happiness because if my expectations are there and that it's there, then you know what's happening? A big gap. I am so caught up in trying to close that gap that I think I have. I don't have time to worry about what is happening to my neighbor. I am more concerned about myself. And I think that is part of what it is. And then when you talk about
so it's a different society.
It's a different
absolutely
society
to the 60s.
It is. Yes. And it has
very
changed.
Different
and the
society.
Question is, you have to reach these people differently. We have to reach the young people differently. It cannot be what worked in the 60s
and
Calypso 70s.
Calypso is not able to do that?
It can, but maybe to some extent. Go back and let us take a profile of the... We should maybe do... And maybe, Ian, that's an assignment for you. We should maybe do a profile of the Calypso lovers and the Calypso participants at the stands and at the shows.
Just to interject briefly, I did my thesis on Calypso as the Steinberg Henry on music, and I also inculcated Calypso. And generally, Dominicans, I can make that bold statement, do not like Calypso. They like Calypso competition during competition.
Okay.
Play Calypso after Calypso, after
and
Calypso competition, they don't want that. They will listen to the dubs, they'll listen to the rap, they'll listen to the hip-hop, they do want Calypso after Calypso.
And the question is, why though?
Interesting. And
yeah, but I mean, is that not so also in Barbados after Crop Over and in Trinidad after Carnival? You mean people listen to Gypsy in June and July?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And in Barbados, you go to the fets?
You hear
and
Calypso?
The songs, Red Plastic Bag, as I tell you, Griner, I went to Cave Hill. And all through the year, Griner is being played, Red Plastic Bag, you know, all of these big stars.
Well, I lived in Trinidad for 2 years, and I didn't I had the same experience, that I didn't hear so much Calypso and so on outside of the season. But the season was much longer in Trinidad, right? And the whole vibes, like Pan, lasted the whole year because Pans needed to bring. And that's what I loved about Mass Camp and the idea of Mass Camp when it first emerged. It was more like a Pan Yard. And I love Pan Yards more than tents, you know, when I was in Trinidad. You know, Pan Yard is really where the culture of carnival, at least for me, because people were hanging out. You could also smoke spliff. And, you know, I mean, it would be generally a more hangout. People would eat whilst guys were practicing. And, you know, it was a whole experience that I really like. Getting back to your point, Afi, about, you know, is Luther's too in your face? And so that's why there's sort of, you know, it's a confrontation of what you're really doing, as opposed to the, maybe the other calypsos, which talk about what the other guys are doing. The guys, is that what your point? That when it hits, the rubber hits the road, in your face like that, people.
But it's interesting. When I listen to Ian's characterization of the crowd reaction to Dice at the semifinals, was it you or was it
no? Yeah, Ian
said that.
Ian, you know. That seems to throw out what I'm saying.
No, but it also, I think it's a reflection of what happened the day before, because when you do things like that, it popularizes.
Yeah.
So, you know, some people might even think that maybe Dice perpetuated it. You know? I mean, I'm just joking. But, you know, when people do that, when political people ban things, all they do is make it more popular.
Yeah, well,
and
yeah.
So I just never understand why they do it. It's better to ignore stuff you don't like rather than give it a platform by doing that. But they keep doing it again and again. It's a ridiculous political response.
That's correct.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say something of the looters. And I think, you know, this song, because, you know, people have been saying, oh, it was glorified looting. And I have tried to listen to that song several times. And in terms of that, I even earlier this afternoon had a discussion with a business person, you know, and the person was saying, you know, so how could you have guys go and sing that song and blah, 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 so on. But what I was saying, and I was thinking about it, and I said, maybe, because, you know, they are right, that the greater damage was caused more by the looting than by the thing. And I think it's not even just the looting. I think in part of this looting of last year, there was a little bit of vengeance and wickedness. Because when you see that people destroyed things that they couldn't even use. So you go to FedEx, you meet people's visas that came and their passport to take the passports and to smear it in the mud. And I mean, what exactly could have been the purpose of that? So you know, that tells you a little bit of that. But what I think happened, and maybe that is part of what maybe a kind of guilty conscience of, in this looting of last year, whereas most times we see looters as the masses, more people.
Yes.
From all reports,
everybody did.
The looters did not just come from the masses.
Cut across the society.
I think that's what the song was talking about. Right. And from what people tell me,
and
that's
that,
why
I think
it was.
Is what it hits. Because now we're saying, okay, yes, I will get loot and one fine. But is it just about me?
Yeah.
And I think that is part of what it is. And, you know, some people say, okay, maybe it focused on the eye rather than the, and, you know, although it did go into other places, rather than talking about the damage and say it is getting something back from the system and saying how in the end we lost the system and blah, blah, blah. Because, you know, because there's some negative impact from that looting that during the process of looting, I think the looters themselves did not comprehend.
No.
Nobody comprehended this loss of jobs that were going to follow, because following that, there's... is no unemployment.
There are hundreds of people out of jobs as a direct result.
Direct result.
Yeah.
And those things, and we didn't think. And so maybe some people say, well, at least this song could have maybe touched about that. But you know what? As Ian said, the writer chooses to focus on his particular message that he wants to bring across.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody else could bring another looting song that speaks to that.
You know what? You know why I'm smiling, Valda? It's like, you know, a fire starts at your house. And I run across and I start banging on your doors, waking, and you get vexed with me
for
waking you up
in the middle of the night
to out your own fire.
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
Mm-hmm.
And it's really often that we misplace our targeted energies on the messenger, and we're not listening. And I've listened to that song in great detail, and I find nothing offensive. And I say so because, you know, it really is important that people learn to look at themselves in the mirror. You know, like when you're a little teenager and you get your first pimple,
but you
don't want to see it,
but
you have to look at it.
Yeah, but what if you did hear something that was offensive? So what?
No, I'm an artist.
Why can't I say things that are offensive? Isn't that what art is about? I can offend you. Who are you?
Yes.
So?
That's the other point. I'm taking it one point at a time.
Yeah, but that's the whole point of Calypso, how you have people judging you and you have this whole analysis of art. Art is overanalyzed and over. It should just be appreciated. And I think that's my point. It's too intellectual.
Mm-hmm.
Art's supposed to be guttural. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to feel it, not think about it. And I think we are in danger of, and I think also not only doing too much, but overanalyzing it so it even loses the impact it would otherwise have.
But it has had the impact. What we're analyzing is the impact it has had.
Mm-hmm.
Not
the
whether
song or the looting.
The song
and
the looting.
Yeah.
The looting before the song.
Okay, but getting back to the looting, it's something I asked about, right? And I asked a white person, and they weren't surprised at all. And they said, you know, that this is a phenomenon that's occurring worldwide after disasters.
Yeah.
I think for the same reasons you saw people smudging FedEx passports or destroying the Waska for no reason, people are fundamentally fed up with those in control.
Yeah.
And they see those institutions and those things as representing that. And that's their one opportunity that they may never get in their life, to vent their frustrations at the system that has kept them in this position. And even people maybe of some worth who also feel diminished because they should be of more worth than they are
okay,
at the
people,
point.
We're going to take a break. Mm-hmm. We're going to take a break. It's been an hour just about, and the phones are beginning to blink. And so let's
Man,
have
that was cut off.
Dicey, give us a little break.
We'll forever remember the aftermath of Hurricane Maria. What's that? The police from Jamaica shot and killed a young looter in Dominica. I was heading out me gate to see what I could take. Long before daybreak, before the city awakes, the local boys might give me a break, but the foreign police is a risk that I have to take. The police are shooters, but I'm an a looter. I carry galvanite, wood, fridge, and stove on this scooter. After a disaster, I'm like the hyena. Self-preservation comes first, and nothing else matters. The businessmen and establishments have me unfit for employment. My needs hold no malice for them. It's just my only means to get back something from the system.
Okay, that was the Dice and Looter giving us a break there, and the phones are beginning to blink. And let me remind you of the numbers so you can join this conversation: 449-3095-309-697. The Digi number is 616-4257, and the overseas numbers, there are two overseas lines right now. Interesting development. 305-432-9624, that's the old one, and the new one is 347-349-7431. So, you know, yeah. You can go to bat if you wish. And actually, I was hoping that one of these lines would have been occupied by now by Mr. Pat Aaron, because we were expecting Pat to call. It's always easier from outside to call in. If you don't want to accumulate, roaming points, you know. So Pat, we're still waiting to hear from you. You're welcome to join. And we have Valda here. Mm-hmm. We have Ian Jackson here. And we have Henry Shillingford. Duncan Stowe was to be with us, but he had to travel suddenly, and he promised to call in from wherever he is. But we haven't heard from Duncan. We still look forward to the possibility of having a call from Duncan. Let's see if this is... No, I guess not. We are waiting for a call from both... what's his name?
Pat and Duncan.
Pat and Duncan. And because that would be some perspective. But Henry, you started raising the point of the question of who owns or not. This looks like an overseas line. Let me see if that is... if that is going to give us one of these gentlemen. Good evening. This is...
Hey, Alfred. Good evening.
Pat Aaron, thank you so much for responding to my pleas. I was just going down on my other knee before. How are you doing? Have you been able to follow the conversation so far?
Yes, I've been listening, but the line is not very clear. You know, can you hear me clearly?
We can hear you. Are you guys being able?
Yeah, I'm hearing you.
Yeah, we're hearing you. For some reason, Pat, it is true that for the overseas lines are just not crystal clear. So let's work with what we have. We're anxious, and I'm sure the listeners are anxious to hear your views. You've heard what we've said so far about the song, whether it reflects actually reality in the society that is so irksome that there are some who, without even reading the lyrics and noting the words or thoughts, had a reaction to it, and or maybe the song is offline. So you wrote the song, Pat. You were online, I'm sure, when you wrote the song. So tell us a bit about the process that you engaged with as you created that song, which in the view of some of us is actually on point?
Well, as you know, looting after a disaster is an international event. It's a reaction, mm-hmm. you know. When the action is any kind of disaster, looting is a natural reaction, and looting is, like you all said a while ago, is not limited to only the struggling people. Many times you see the well-to-do people looting as well. Mm-hmm. So listening to the reasons, the excuses, the maybe the bad feelings that looters had after this one, because this was a special looting event. I remember Hurricane David, there was significant looting too, but not in the in the level of this last one after Maria, where people even destroyed people's offices and business tools and equipment, you know, unnecessarily. So the idea of the song, which Ozzy got immediately on the night when Dai sang it at the quarterfinals, is to show what is in the mind of a young looter. And I think the many people can identify with that. I mean, there will be some people who will have on whom it will have a little adverse effect. I guess it might show for them, or it might, or a certain part might be representing them. It might be those who lose from it. But the thing is, it's a reality. It's a reality, and business people who stand to lose from that maybe need to look deeper into that, because it's a thing that can happen anytime. And what can they do to minimize, you know, their loss in situations like that? And also, in the case of Maria, the total inaction, you know, of the police and their failure to protect public and private property, you know, will cause some people to have a maybe little negative feeling about it. But the bottom line is, it is a reality, and not just in Dominica, anywhere in the world, even in Animal Kingdom too. You know, it's just a natural aspect of, you know, our life.
Panic and a rage reaction. But, you know, I heard the private sector people in their meetings. I did attend one of their meetings. They did raise the point of the damage done to them by the looting. And they did raise the point of the absence of security and, you know, guarding and so forth of the premises and of the city. And they did something interesting. They said, "We want this investigated. We want whoever was responsible for the absence of security to be held publicly accountable." But interestingly, they didn't display a willingness to look at the looter and say, "But why did they do this? Where does this come from? Are there some causes? Are there some factors that can be dealt with? And is there some action to be taken in that regard as well?" In the same way that they saw the need for action on the security side. I have not heard that from any private sector organization or any social organization in the country.
Well, I mean, if these private people listen to the song and they look into the song, this will probably urge them on to take a deeper look at what is the root cause. You know, but also, like you said, they said they wanted an investigation into why the security forces failed. I mean, but how strong do they want that? I mean, if you know how Dominica is now, just mentioning it or saying you want it or writing a letter about it is not going to cut it. That, you know, it stops right there. So it depends on how prepared they are, you know, to go the length they need to go to get the investigation done.
I think somebody in studio panel wants to react, respond, Henry.
Well, the point you brought up, clients and big businessmen, major businessmen, have expressed their utter. I didn't even realize, because I was holed up in my fallen down house for like, you know, 2 weeks before I ventured out even to the village. I mean, they said it was 6 days before any police presence, and that they were extremely, I mean, people who may even be aligned to the present powers that be. I didn't realize that. I mean, it was just a free-for-all for 6 days. There was no security. I understand that Whitchurch tried some of their own, like Damien, you know, was shooting gun in the air and people just ran over him because he wasn't prepared to shoot anybody. But he thought shooting in the air might, you know, discourage people. So I do believe that there is a deep resentment. Now, I agree with Pat. How far do these people want to take that umbrage, you know? But there is a seething from what I have seen among businessmen. Like, how did they let them do that to us?
Yeah, let all others content. My view of that is completely different from the panel. I just think that it's just about man and greed. That's all. No matter what job you have in life, you will loot because man is evil. And the song, you know, because if Dice says in the song, as Pat has written it, that I-Man is a looter while police are shooters, you are suggesting that, well, the police are just shooters, you know, but I'm a looter. So that means you're sort of aggrandizing yourself because you are a looter in that respect. In my classroom as a teacher, it happened to me last week. A guy was chewing and I said, oh, what are you doing in the class? So the student said, oh, sir, he's chewing gum and so forth. The guy told me, but sir, Mr. Eating is recess. Who is wrong and who is right? They are both wrong. You understand what I'm saying? They are both wrong. So I'm saying that, oh, it's a wonderful song, but me as an individual, as an artist, as a writer myself, like Pat, I would not have addressed the song in that direction, because what the song does in that respect is that it sort of, whilst it brings to the fore, which is very good, why people are doing certain things, people who had jobs, because the persons are trying to exhale, they're trying to get something from the system, people who are in the system also looted. So what is the problem? The problem is not looters. The problem is we as a people and our greed. So whether we have plenty or not. Because some of those people, persons who are in society or not, they will eventually loot.
But how does that affect
you? I don't know what they eventually loot.
Yes, they will. No, they have been. They have been.
They have looted. But for me personally, I don't accept looting. I know all of the looting.
Wonderful.
But personally, because it happens, not only here, as you rightly said, it's a worldwide phenomenon. And I always ask myself the question.
But you don't have to
why
accept
is it that people loot?
Right.
Because for me personally, greed. There's nothing that could force me to loot. There's
greed.
Absolutely nothing. That is my point. But no, I say something because I was thinking, and that is one of the things I tell people I'm always perplexed about, even when I see these things. Because during Maria, when Maria was raging with all her noises and you don't know exactly what's happening because you're holding a little dark space, you could see nothing. One of the thoughts that came to me was, in a twinkle of an eye, I could lose my life mm-hmm. and everything I own. Mm-hmm. In a twinkle. I have no control over what's going to happen.
True.
So I could not see when I get up at 5:15, when the bright day, by then after 5 it was bright and I could go out and evaluate what had happened, that I could think of going to loot. And even when I walked on the Wednesday and I saw people, I could not think of joining them. And I remember meeting a student of mine who is now a teacher. And she was walking, but I don't know if she, her husband and her child, I don't know what they had. She had nothing in her hand. I couldn't tell if she was looting. Her husband had something, a bag. Mm-hmm. I couldn't tell what was in it. Mm-hmm. And I could never, if you asked me if they were looting, I could tell you no, because I didn't mm-hmm. see them and so on. But I guess there was a little guilt. Because she came to me and she said, Miss, I agonized before I left. I said, agonized about what? She said, I agonized before I went to loot. I said, well, I would not know how you would have looted. And I said, what did you agonize about? And then, you know, she began to explain. And I said, while you were agonizing, you should have agonized not to loot. But I think when I hear this song, again, I get a perspective of the looter. So you have the different things. You have the perspective of those who loot. There's the perspective of those who will not loot. There is a perspective of those who were looted. There is, so the song portrays a perspective.
A reality.
And as Henry says, all ideas must contend, mm-hmm. and all perspectives must
But the question that I heard Ian raising...
But let me give a personal perspective. I asked Valda, you say you're not a looter, and I'm not a looter. Mm-hmm. But I live next to a project in Bellevue, right? And there was just a hurricane, and it blew everything down. And in that project, there was plywood, there was galvanized, there was 2x4s, there was, you know, mm-hmm. there was all kind of material.
Construction,
right? And Bellevue people took, right? Now, is that looting? Now, I told them, no, that's not looting. People abandon their property. Now, I mean, it's what is loot? Now, would you loot? Now, I watched for a while, you know, and I just didn't take because, of course, I'm shilling for them. I can't be seen to be taking. Right?
Who says?
Don't you know the society says, No, but I watched this happen, Valda, for over 10. I mean, people were ridiculous. People took bales of steel to build their house. Totally unnecessary. That's straight up looting, right? But I watched this happen, right, for over 2 weeks, and nobody defended the property. Like, it was simple to send up two soldiers in tent to camp out there. Nobody was taking anything. I watched it, and then after a while, I said, well, I'm going to get mine, right? So I took some stuff that I, you know, I thought I would need. But the point is that in those situations, you say you're not a looter. I said I was not a looter. But
you are a looter.
It seems so.
Not seems so, you are a looter.
Why? How?
You just admitted it.
No. Yeah. I said that they took abandoned property.
No,
right?
But my point is, forget, you know, we can go around the table many times. Yeah. But I want to get back to the point that Jacko was making, which is this. Does the song...
Glorify,
or does the song reveal the greed and the other ugly part of us that we don't like to talk about?
It does both of them, Afi.
The whole story
talks about the looting and what happened, and some guys want to get something from the system. Some people has this only way. In fact, it ends always like that. It's my only way
that's
to get something from the system.
That's a chorus,
right?
Yeah.
Suggesting. But there are many people who are already in the system and getting from the system, and they're still looted.
Well, they're looting.
So how do you identify those people?
They're looting 24/7.
They're right. So they're always looting. When you say how...
But the song speaks about
When you say
that.
How, young man, you are just an internship, you know, in a doctor, but I am a doctor for 50 years. But it's because I am aggrandizing myself against that person.
Doesn't the song talk
I
about
don't
that?
Know if
doesn't
I would
the
say
song
this song aggrandize?
What's that?
Doesn't the song say
about
that
pain,
there are looters? There are looters of all kinds.
I will tell you, we here are adults and we're intelligent enough people. The young teenager on the street, I'm a school teacher at my school, don't see all what you're saying there. They just see now. Yeah, Iron Man is a looter. You have to be careful.
No,
artists are also responsible. Should have a responsibility also. Mm-hmm. You see, you're not just saying things for the people in the system of people that can believe and conceptualize stuff. That's just my view. And
that's a good view.
Because people have to conceptualize stuff, you know. But as a teacher, I'm telling you, my students, all this highfalutin language in-depth analysis. They don't see that. They're seeing the fact that, but dicey and them and those looters, man, there's nothing wrong in school.
No,
we can loot.
But what's highfalutin,
you know? So that is what they're
about
seeing.
A song that says people in their government jobs, mm-hmm. like you just said, mm-hmm. you just said it, mm-hmm. that people in their jobs are on a daily basis looting this system.
So, right, but I'll tell you what is wrong about it. Yes.
What's wrong about that when, in fact, politically, mm-hmm. that is being said openly
for
decades?
So that is the truth about the song. But when you say that now, the song extends. It goes on saying, these guys have been doing that for many years. It's now my opportunity. And that is the dangerous part of the song.
That's the dangerous
part. Yes, and that is part I want to really deal with.
No. But it's a reality.
It's a reality, but not all reality
is... If your
is...
children see you doing something...
Yes.
...that is wrong, and you continue doing it...
Yes, they'll think it's okay.
And what are they going to do?
They're going to do it.
Okay.
They're going to do it.
All right.
But you don't.
That's an ugly part of it.
Right.
Of,
so then you say that in the song, that you guys have been doing all these things. You know what I mean? So not because those guys are doing it, that I, as a poor Malawi, should also do it.
Okay.
And that is the message I think that should be said.
That's the missing line.
Yeah, that's the missing line. Yes.
Okay, got you.
I think Pat should. Pat,
are you there?
Pat should respond to that.
Do you care to respond to that last segment of the conversation about the question of does the song miss an opportunity to turn the corner on looting?
Well, no, not at all, and at least that's not the intention. So that's not so at all. The song is really the perspective of a looter, a young looter. This is what he's thinking.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? Because I'm going back a little bit. Many people loot him. I'm listening to Henry's story there. Many people loot because there is a feeling that if I don't take some for myself now, these people who loot in will get and I will not have. You understand? Especially where food is concerned after a disaster, you don't know how long it's going to be before you'll get anything. So you see people looting food. You're saying, okay, you don't want people to see you looting. You might stand up there, but in your mind you're saying, boy, what if them fairs take only food and I don't get none for myself? Where am I going to get food?
Pat, do you think there was an element, to use Jaco's term, of a missed opportunity and hence a bit of irresponsibility in not saying, you know, I see this happening, I see this going on, I see what you're doing, it's wrong. And at least one voice to say, I'm not doing that, I'm not going there.
Well, I mean, you have to be very strong not to go there, you know, Afi. And being strong not to go there is not usually not honesty, you know. It's a matter of not wanting to be seen. It's not wanting to be caught, you know. But if it's a situation where you sure nobody will see you and you won't get caught, which is why there is daily looting as in some, you most people will do it. But it's not honesty that prevents people from looting. Is not wanting to be caught.
Brings us to the question of the responsibility of a writer and the lyricist. And let's talk about that, because that's, I think, the point that Jaco was making. Did you miss an opportunity as a prominent writer to sort of say to the society, hey guys, what you just said? You know, that...
What is the question?
Meaning, did you miss an opportunity to say, look, you know, not everybody is going to give in. It's going to be tough to say no to the looting. It's going to be tough not to join the crowd. But one or two of us are going to say, we ain't going there. Did you miss an opportunity there?
Well, I wouldn't say no, and I wouldn't say yes, because a song is a thing that is always a work of art. It's never. I myself have never been satisfied with a song I write. I just have to deal with deadlines, but I've never been satisfied with any song that I write. Any song can be, you know, I mean, there are times where I feel when people have pointed out to me a year after or months after Carnival, one word, I say, wow, if I think about that word, you understand? So I mean, that is a yes and a no answer.
Say something here, Pat, is that your responsibility? I mean, you wanted to write a song about the perspective of the looters. If somebody want to write a song about how you shouldn't loot like Valda, Valda should write a song about how you shouldn't loot. So I think art, you can't, or Ian, a writer. Well, I mean, you can't ask artists to satisfy everybody like that. Art doesn't work like that. And I think Calypso tends to want to put artists in this kind of manner, and that's my critique, if you will, that it needs to be loosened up. I am not in school. Uh-huh. You know, I'm not having a teacher look over me and what you say and what you don't say. Uh-huh. Art needs to be more flex than that. And I think we're in danger of overanalyzing this shit and spoiling the art form.
Okay. Pat, you wanted to join? You want to say something? Pat, go ahead.
Yeah.
But you heard Henry's observation. You have any reaction to that?
Okay, good. Okay, I'll get you in a few minutes.
No, because something, you know, Ian said, and I agree with the point that yes, because artists do have influence on others, yeah. But especially in that looting, and that was for me my biggest thing about
the
looting.
I agree with Henry to the point that I mean, is it my responsibility to?
Sorry, saved the country.
Yeah, I mean, that is not my responsibility. I mean, there are people responsible for that who did not hold up to their responsibility, you know? So no, that's not my responsibility. I mean, I do, when I write songs, I remain society conscious, you know, I mean, example conscious. I do that, but that's not my responsibility. There are people who had the responsibility to prevent what happened from happening, and they didn't do it. You know, so no, that's not at my doorstep at all.
Okay. Valda has a point she wants to make.
That in terms of, you know, the artists and the writers, they do have a responsibility because people listen to them, people follow them. That's a fact. Whether they want it or not, that just happens. But one of the things that Afi, even I have spoken about that already on radio, that really during this looting that thing me, was the, it was like a family outing. The fact that parents had their children.
What?
No, it was true. That was what shocked me.
Parents and their children?
Yeah.
It was a family outing. That was what shocked me.
No, that's so a whole different ball
and
game.
And that, to me, going to have greater impact on the children.
That's a whole that I saw different any other person ball. That's the first time that, I've heard that
no,
said.
No, that for me is for me, my fundamental main issue with this looting.
This is deadly.
So because I am saying, when we bring our children along, it's not what we say to children, you know, afterwards. Children go back to what we do. And this is the practice. So we say,
What are you telling me there?
Yeah, but at the same point, I mean, what Val is saying is...
one of the main issues, yeah. I don't know.
But it relates back to both the point I was making in terms of how long, and the point that Pat was making, that if you don't, people by and large will take advantage of opportunities. That's why you have police or any sort of this thing. I mean, without that, you will have families going because there's nothing stopping you. I mean, we have to not, and I think it's unfair to put it on on the artist. These are institutional things, and then the same institutions want to get vexed, like you say, when you put it back in their face. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the reality is that we are, and I wouldn't go so far as Ian and say humans are evil.
No, I don't agree.
There is absolute greed, right?
Yeah.
But the point is that just by and large, if you give people an opportunity to do something, right, they will do it. Even if it's crazy and they might die, people want to push the envelope. And so once you give people the opportunity, people will take it. And so it is very hard, as Thing says, to you being in a crowd is mass psychology. And Valda clearly is an exceptional woman. Because she can watch all these people do that and nobody's stopping her from doing it, and just her own internal, you know, barometer.
Testicular fortitude.
Mm. Well, she doesn't have that, does she? She doesn't have that, Afi. What are you saying?
I was being generic.
As a writer myself,
I
agree with everything that you all guys are saying. I don't think writers should be censored. I am just concerned about writers, you know, carrying a certain amount of responsibility. Because personally, I think Pat Aaron and Dice as a combination is as powerful as the Prime Minister and his cabinet. That is how I see it.
But if that is the case,
and
then...
Yes, so these guys, when you go to write a song and present a song, your choice of words are also very, very, very important. You are writing from the perspective of a looter, but you should also have some way of saying, well, okay, yes, I did this because the system really had me under pressure. But, however, X, Y, and Z, and trust me, there are many persons, even in my own area, I know that never looted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
There are many persons I know that never, and they were deprived persons.
Are you suggesting then
that never
there's,
looted?
There's still an opportunity for that
yes.
to be done in the final?
Yes, yes.
That one phrase...
Something could be done to show these guys is not it.
Right.
And I just and that's my only problem,
well,
basically.
There is a part, and I don't know if a part is the right, but there is a part in the song, and maybe to you it's maybe not enough.
Right.
Where it talks about
last
that
verse.
I may too may pay.
Yeah.
That, you know, if I have taken enough.
Yes.
Yeah, so maybe it's suggested by the fact that there is a payment. Suggested. So maybe, but Ian is maybe suggesting it's not strong enough, but there is in the song. And then I can see some of what Ian is saying. Yeah.
You know, but
yo, you know how much bad boy song there is about me go loot and, you know, bad boy song there is in reggae and so on. I think that, you know.
But you don't even have to go to reggae for it. Go to Sparrow.
Go to Sparrow. Any of these things.
10 to 1 is murder.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know,
that 10 to 1 is murder.
Is
that a physical thing? Pentagonal murder is was talking about the reunion of the.
I thought it was 10 minutes to 1.
You're being academic now.
That's what it was.
10 to 1 is murder was seen by the masses of Trinidad and Tobago as licks.
No. So if that was seen now, I don't know if it was seen now because I always saw it. Even as a licker boy, I didn't see it as that.
But
anyway, when that song was. Then that song was that answer. Well, that is what the message I'm saying.
Yeah.
That young people are not seeing it like us.
Yeah.
And it even come from my perspective from being a school teacher, that they are not seeing those things that we are seeing there. They're seeing that them fellas was looting, so we ourselves can
loot
too.
What that raises for me.
And really, before you continue, Afi, really, I'm saying that it has been proven in my lifetime on this earth that poor people and deprived people have more respect and more values than those people up there.
Not because those guys do that.
Not because they loot up Rio River Hotel. Not because they did this or this or whatever. Then we too have to do that. There are some people that come at your home and you know you have to watch them everywhere they go, you know.
Yeah.
Because they're looking for something to take.
Okay.
They have more than you, but they're looking for something to take.
But you know what that begins to suggest, you know, and as we were talking at the beginning of this, this really, we're talking about ourselves.
Yes, our society, greed, our society,
our culture. And it does suggest that when there was a time in my life, I do recall, we would go out, leave the family house unlocked and open.
Oh, yes.
And I remember that. You probably do too.
Yeah. Yes.
And everything was intact. The neighbors were in charge of the community, of the neighborhood, etc., etc. But that didn't happen by rainfall. That happened as a result of the deliberate nurturing of a sense of neighborhood, a sense of community, a sense of go by Mr. So-and-so and tell them, look the left window open, or look the rain fall in, go and close the door for them, etc. You know, in other words, you were deliberately raised in a certain kind of way that resulted in you. Now, the question is, those young people in your classroom are not probably having the benefit of that kind of upbringing at home or at school.
Here's the upbringing, just to interject there. During this hurricane business, I saw four young teenagers, you know, close to me. They took a cutlass and they punctured a petrol, a gas tank of a vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Poor me, I can't say anything because these guys have cutlasses and weapons. They'll turn on me. And I see that was really arbitrary.
They were young
guys, yes, and I'm afraid to say anything.
Whoa.
So when they hear something out in the park, what do you think they're going to do?
Mm-hmm.
What are they going to do in the park on that song?
But Ian, to pick her up.
What are they thinking?
On the other side of your coin, which is for everyone like that, there must be four or five who will not do it.
So
in the same way that you're urging Pat to kind of balance, I urge us in the conversation we're having here to balance it off.
Yes.
That there is a remnant. There is, you know, a kind of some deposit left in our society.
I was just saying that in that song should address those situations.
But nobody, and you had an opportunity, a great opportunity to interject and stop and give them a briefing.
Self-preservation. I agree. I felt guilt to that.
It's
very volatile.
Okay, guys.
Let's go back to the beginning of the conversation.
It's 7:35.
We have
20 minutes.
I don't think I'll take up the whole 20 minutes. go back to the beginning of the show, and when you talk about what is culture, I mean, is there a Dominican culture? You're talking, and you often do, it was a nostalgic sort of ear, because that was clearly very special to you, but you're talking about 60 years ago. I mean, this is just not a reality. Dominica was homogenous at that time. Not many people went abroad as well, and people knew whole families. You mm-hmm. were a whole family. Both our families knew each other, you know. Mm-hmm. Your father had this very malediction of cutting people's hair, mm-hmm. you know. So, so there was this whole congeniality mm-hmm. that fostered that. That's just not the reality, and we have to accept we've moved on.
Okay.
And I get your point about if we're shouldn't writers even be writing about Trump or, you know, climate change or mm-hmm. things that aren't so localized, because they're issues that are on Dominica's minds. And so,
guys, we have some other callers trying to get into the call.
Okay. No,
Pat, do you have any other comments you'd like to share? Because I want to take some other calls. And frankly, I'm not sure of the technology enough to know that if I take them on, that I'll disconnect you. So I'm going to give you a chance to sort of make some maybe closing comments. Pat? Okay, Pat may have decided that was his closing comment earlier. Let's take a few. Good evening, caller. Thank you for being so persistent.
Hey, good evening, Afi, and good evening to your panel.
Good evening.
This is IP.
IP, how are you doing?
Everything blessed.
Everything blessed.
And corruption kills.
I think it's a very interesting conversation, very enlightening.
Thank you.
I just wanted to make a little contribution.
Go right ahead, sir.
The first thing I'd like to tell Jaco is I'm not convinced that if Pat had put a whole paragraph in the way he wants, he can't guarantee that would have affected any young person. And why I say that is because I think there are three aspects to the looting. Because if we ask ourselves why people loot, Jaco's concern to me refers to one aspect of the looting, for want of a better word, what he seems to think is the criminality or the morality of looting. But for me, that's only one aspect of the looting that occurs after a disaster. In our modern society, there are two other aspects. One is that we have come to extend ourselves to our possession. And in disasters, we, in our sort of acquisitive society, we see ourselves not only as our physical selves, we see ourselves also as our possessions. So when we lose that in a disaster situation, it's similar to losing a loved one or something close to us. So we lose our possessions. So there is what you call an acute grief reaction, which is characterized by wanting to replace what you've lost. So that's one aspect of the looting that's going on worldwide after disasters, because we live in such a acquisitive materialist world. Second, the third aspect of the looting that I think isn't being considered is what you call the crowd psychology, where I might have left my home to go see what damage was happening in Roseau. And by the way, I didn't loot. And you get drawn in by that crowd psychology where you lose your individual identity and you take on the identity of the crowd at the moment. It's similar to what happens when you have football games and then you're sitting there with your son looking at a football game, and then the mob, there's a little mob and a little what they call them, supporters start battling. Before you know what, you have a big sort of mob fight on the field. And you there with your son, and before you know what, you caught up in that as well. So it's all, so these are aspects of the looting that we don't put in the equation in discussing it. So I just thought I'd share that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, IP. And gentlemen and lady, it's 7:40. We're going to take as many of the calls as we can, mm-hmm. bearing in mind that I also would like to get a perspective on the reaction that has been taken by the authorities to the song, right? And I'd like to get some perspective on that before we leave here today. Good evening, caller. Thank you so much for being patient. Thank you. Go right ahead, please.
Happy blessings to you, sir.
Hey, what's up, big man?
I call Dr. Henry. Blessings to you, my
blessings
friend.
To you, blessings. How are you and the little boy?
I call with your cool
wonderful.
On your side.
Everybody's good on our side. You know, I still have that Christmas gift of 2016, you know.
Ooh. I'm inquiring about your brother updated me about your well-being and told me it was not there, so, but I was inquiring as well. Henry, blessings to you, sir.
Yes, sir.
Yes, my lord. Blessings to you and Jacko.
Yes, my brother.
If I did not know you, I would say it's a bit hypocritical on your behalf.
All right.
Realizing you have a very young audience as a school teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're being overly protective of them. That's just my own opinion.
Yeah, nothing wrong.
Mm-hmm. No offense meant. Mm-hmm.
No man. Yes.
But I am seeing where... I've listened to people sing your song, your daughter, and other people,
mm-hmm.
and the level of masking and sarcasm and all of that goes with
mm-hmm.
it is as equal as what you're critiquing, not criticizing, but you're showing where amendments could be made, or even there is room for some amendments to be made. But guess what?
Mm-hmm.
It is saying, one day I'll be meant to pay for the choices that I made.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still showing many other areas where it is really telling you, I'm not glorifying, or the other word to use,
mm-hmm.
but right in his writing, glorifying or...
aggrandizing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is already the remedying of the lyrical content that seems so inciting. It is telling you there's consequences to your actions. So that is where I'm saying, as a writer, and Henry said it carefully, I am an artist, and then I may have painted a piece of art and somebody, oh, you had to expose the genitals like that, or you had to, the breast, you could not, you know, and that is my expression, not to... have any extension of a perverted agenda, so to speak. It's just an expression, and with no intention to pervert the whole thing. So I appreciate your critiquing as another writer, as another artist, because it is healthy. And I know, Pat, no offense meant, I don't think Jacko would mean to offend you or anything.
I don't think Pat takes it anyway.
It's just an intelligent discussion, and it is healthy, according to Doc who just called a while ago. And I did listening, and I give thanks for the opportunity. Take care. Blessings.
Okay, thank you very much. Any comments on this? We're going to have to stop a little earlier because we have
a
crowd of people going to barge into the studio just now, and we'll have to exit if we don't want to be trampled. Yeah. So we have to stop a little bit before leaving. What happened with the banning of Dice and Dice's song from the opening of Carnival? Is that a significant sequel to the song? Is that driven by the song? Is that driven by the concerns that we have, a blinding concern?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it just, you know, insecurity on the part of the feeling of some authorities, and they're taking it out on somebody?
Yeah, just quickly, when I say talk about people are just people, because you have similar problems like that with Chuck Doss. When Chuck Doss was a Calypsonian, he sang all sorts of things.
Yeah.
Now that he's a minister of government, he sanctions certain things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I just talking about people. People are just greedy, and that is just people. You know, it's not, in other words, the people that we talk about today as looters, tomorrow they're going to be the prime ministers of Dominica. No, and they're going to loot.
The song says...
I'm just giving you an example, right?
Ah, not in the future.
Right, okay, they are right now, right. Well, but people that see, right, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So the people that we see that are in authority now, those people that are looking at them in authority, they are going to be in authority and do the same thing. So it's just about man. That's how I look at things.
But that's
and
not
so,
such a...
Yeah, that's my general thing. That's man. Because
okay, get
man,
specific.
Yeah, but the specific thing is that I do not think that I understand why the DFC or the authorities banned the song. Calypso Station would not do that because we don't censor songs. I mean, if I had to censor a song in Calypso, I'd maybe look at the Pussycat Thing, you know, which was, you know, one of those songs that people, you know, were sung. But no, I don't think it should be censured in that respect, because that is a people song. People love the song. I love the song. Everybody loves the song, you know. But I understand why it was. Because, for instance, if you have a business place, you just went through a hurricane, you have visitors, maybe you have people that you invited and whatever, and you are singing a song like that, it could cause some eyebrows to raise.
And really?
that's basically, yes, it can. it can cause some eyebrows. So I think that was the reason why it was. While I do support banning or censoring of songs, Calypso Association has no problem with it. I personally have no problem with it. But that aspect of the song, the first part of the song, where it sort of says, well, hey, but you are this, you know, but I am that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, makes it sound like what I did, you know, I can justify it because... Mm-hmm. You know,
because
things happen.
That analysis completely.
The truth is, I don't know why they banned the song because they did not state why they banned the song.
No, they didn't. I don't. That's why I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know.
Okay, they banned the artist.
They banned the artist.
They banned the artist, and we assume.
Which is even more serious.
And we don't have the reason. But then the crowd demonstrating their own position on that. But, you know, I want to say something because it just dawned on me now. And, you know, after the looting, one of the things people said often, looters, the people who looted and the looted people since they met it. So while, yes, I take what the point Ian is saying, but there was a significant percentage of persons who had that very view because they met people and they said, now we equal. And to come with that, so somebody singing about that, I cannot see how that could raise any eyebrows because that was... That is something that happened. And yes, it is not something we want to glorify.
No.
It's not something we condone. But you know what?
You need to speak
facts
about it.
Are facts.
It gives the wrong reason why it happened. But that's
no,
the problem.
But the reason, we don't know the reason. So why did a person who looted, like my nephew Kondwani, they looted the shop. The shop was not broken into. They broke into the
greed.
Shop.
Greed.
Forget, it's beyond greed, Ian. That cannot be the simple reason.
It's greed too simple.
Ian, it cannot be a mindset you have that all men are greedy and evil. In that case, then you shouldn't be a teacher.
The world.
Because then you are saying children are greedy and evil, and they can be nothing. Right. They can amount to no good. So that cannot be the premise from which you come. It cannot. I refuse to accept that.
Well, those that aren't baptized are evil, I guess.
No, it's nobody. Listen.
Isn't that the Catholic point?
No, but the point is, lot of persons, when they looted. They said that to me, Kondwani, a fellow medium, and said that. I understood because somebody told me, and I didn't speak to Mr. Green directly. People said that to him.
To Paul, yeah.
People said that to Mr. Nassif. Mm-hmm. People said that to quite a lot of the people who were looting.
But it was such a false claim.
Yeah, exactly. But that itself, that statement about no, we are equal, is a very profound and deep statement that speaks to so much. And so, folks, whether we like it or not, whether we accept it or not, it is a fact that happened.
Vanity.
And so, again, we say social calypso speaks to, so not
social
only social
reality.
But political commentary, it speaks to social commentary and reflects the state of mind. And so that doesn't mean that all persons felt that way.
But there was
is a segment of the population that
absolutely
felt that way. And so this song reflects a segment of the people.
Yeah.
We do have some people who are like that. We do have some people
better pay attention
who are glorifying. And so we need to address it.
Yeah.
Because it is indeed a fact.
In fact, Jaco.
Well, it will always happen until God Christ comes, until the world ends.
Well,
it will always have Christ had people that were like that. It will have people today. Our great grandchildren will be like that.
Let's stay on earth for a while.
There was
one business place in the city of Roseau that was not looted at all, but had round the clock
security,
round the premise
security
and protection.
Mm-hmm.
What does that tell us? It tells us that there was a deterrence. And that is what, that more than anything else, is what irks a lot of people in the business community.
Mm-hmm.
That there is a way to have stopped this.
Yes.
Because look,
I
you
agree.
Stopped it over there.
I agree, yes.
And it's not even concerned about the looter. It's concerned about, my God, you have something of value here. Let's protect it. But we didn't.
That's true. That's
and we showed
yes.
that we have the capacity to. So it's very interesting.
But if I may ask you,
your closing statement, Henry, 7:50.
Well, you asked a question about why the song was banned, and I thought Evaldo would go to the point as an entrepreneur, is that these people that run the show are the most biggest idiots I have ever seen. Because they pay the guy and tell him not to sing.
Yeah.
Now, if you didn't want the guy, don't sign any contract. There was no guarantee. There's no reason you had to invite Dice. And first of, and furthermore, that whole concept was an anathema to me to Carnival. It brought Carnival to the lowest. Carnival is not a show. It's a parade. So it serves them damn right if to move it from a parade, even if they had shortened the parade because it's less money and, you know, made it smaller, mm-hmm. but still have it as a parade. How you can open Carnival with a concert? So everything about that process was wrong. You know, and it shows that we have incredibly simple-minded people in positions, so that they had to end up paying my tax dollars to Dice and tell them not to sing.
And they don't have the balls to stand up and take
responsibility. Well, some of them don't have balls at all, you know, Afi.
To take the responsibility for the action. They're leaving it up to Val Coffey. Val didn't decide this.
Right.
Val did not decide this.
Right.
Afi, that goes on the whole long
story. Yeah,
that's
another long story. Yeah.
No, but I like to end with a long story. So, we'll come back to
it. No, but I think the public needs to know that what this suppression means to them.
Yeah.
It means that this suppression not only suppressed a art form, but it means that it took their money and gave it away free. And that's why the government and the public should be quite upset. Beyond the suppression of the art form, it's rank stupidity of organizers to organize something like that.
Okay, on that note, gentlemen, Jaco, I want to thank you.
Yeah, man, thank you.
At no notice, you presented yourself, and I look forward to returning the favor sometime in the future.
Yeah, man,
Henry, thank you.
You
so much, and Valda, as always. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
All right. And we'll let the looter take us out of here.